Crisis. And that does it for our show. By the way, Juan Gonzalez will be giving a speech Friday at the Columbia School of Journalism, reflecting on his 40 years of fighting for racial and social justice in journalism. It begins at 4:10 p.m. on Friday. See democracynow.org for more information. A very special thanks to our colleagues here in Sharm el-Sheikh, to Hani Massoud, to Sharif Abdelkaddous, Dennis Moynihan, Nermeen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
When I first came to Brookhaven town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Then one day I turned on the dial.
Way, hey, 90.1.
There I found music to make me smile.
Way, hey, 90.1.
I waited for a legal ID.
Way, hey, 90.1.
The DJ said WUSB.
Way, hey, 90.1.
They start each day with the rising sun.
Way, hey, 90.1.
Don't ever finish till after day is done.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you want good music to hear,
way, hey, 90.1.
There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear.
Way, hey, 90.1.
So if you like the sounds, do take a look.
Way, hey, 90.1.
At WUSB Stony Brook.
Hey, hey.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. Do you know that sea shanty has been around since the day we went on the air back in 1977? And this radio station exists because so many people devote their time and energy to it, and also because of listeners like you who call 631-632-6901 and pledge your support, or go to WUSB.fm and pledge your support online. We are in our autumn fundraiser right now, and we ask for your support so we can keep this radio station broadcasting and keep shows like the one that's about to begin on the air. And that show is called Off the Wall. good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I am over here.
How you doing?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
I'm better than last week.
You are? I am too.
I know we were...
astonished, but...
Well, last week at this time, we were trying to get people to calm down just a little bit, you know, and not pay so much attention to the pundits on TV and the pollsters who keep calling all these people. Nobody knows who they are. They keep calling. And turns out that was the right thing to do. I think it was the right thing to do regardless of what happened. I was expecting maybe this is going to be a bad night. Turned out to not be a bad night at all. In fact, turned out to be a pretty good week. And it just, you know, we have to remember this in the future. If we're told certain things are going to go a certain way, ask yourself, how do they know that? And is this really something that we want to stake our feelings, our well-being? We want to trust them with that. Because honestly, so many people I know were feeling really, really bad in anticipation of what was going on. And this wasn't anything new either. This was happening for months. People were saying, yeah, Democrats are going to lose big because it just has to happen that way. And no matter what, you know, Roe versus Wade is gone. Okay, but that's still not going to be enough. And we're going to have all these election deniers in positions of power. Every democracy is dead. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, you know, message received. We have to wake up. We have to do something. But, you know, I think a lot of the media fell short in what they thought people could do once they became aware of the situation. I think that's what we saw. We saw people step up and fix things as best they could. Big exception right here on Long Island. I'll get to that in a few minutes. But for the most part, I think things went about as well as they could have gotten. They could have gotten a little better, I think. But I'll take it.
Yeah, the over-reliance on polls, and the more I heard it, the more suspicious I'm like, you know, what we're forgetting every time we cite polls as being so important, it is during campaign season, but polls are wrong, and we're starting to forget it or being tempted to be lulled into believing that all polls, just anytime, anywhere, anything that's said that is referenced by a poll mm-hmm. is somehow accurate or right. Polls notoriously can be wrong. So that I mean, I just made me feel like that plus the kinds of pumping up that was going on to try to get a lot of that red wave to materialize, I think was partly activating people, but led to the feeling of like, man, how is this gonna really go?
Right.
As the media is just echoing all this stuff that's labeled as this fortune telling that is really just you know, small groups of sampling. So that's not truly reflective. The thing that is reflective of everybody's will is the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the careful, cautious emergence of details, I think, was important. There's a lot of conclusions that you don't want to jump to. And it's been an exercise in patience, but also astonishment, like realizing what is possible, what people are capable of when they're too busy to be talking in those sampling groups and they're just doing and redoubling efforts in the work of campaigns and getting that vote out, specifically that part, you know, regardless of which effort people are behind. We have to live up to our end of how the whole thing functions.
Well, I think it, you know, the key is obviously getting information out, getting accurate information out. And there were just so many lies and so much misinformation, and that was just being passed around like candy to people. For instance, the whole crime thing in this state that Lee Zeldin was behind, that in itself is a crime, I think. Basically, making it seem like we live in a state of terror, quite literally, and that somehow it's all Kathy Hochul's fault. while turning a blind eye to those red states where crime is higher. Florida is a good example of that, but there are many others. And no, it's not the Republican governor's fault there, but it's the Democratic governor's fault wherever there's a Democratic governor. Things like that. I think people did see through it eventually, but there was given so much airtime and was taken so seriously by people who really should know better. And I think a lot of damage was done as a result of that. I think when people hear actual facts, and I know it's very hard these days to define what actual facts are because somehow that word no longer means what it used to mean. I have faith in most people. That's why I'm able to carry on conversations with people who I completely disagree with on many, many issues, because when you get to the root of it, we want the same thing. You know, we want peace and prosperity and people to be left alone and things like that. But when it's portrayed and exaggerated in the mass media in particular ways, then people turn into these huge enemies that must be defeated at all costs, no matter what. Even if they're saying something that makes total sense, well, you have to come up with something that completely counters that. And this is true. You know, if you go back to the wars in Yugoslavia, you go into Rwanda, you'll see that media has always played a big role in turning people against each other. Whether it's AM radio or cable news, if you control the masses with media, it's a very, very powerful weapon. And so many people are taken in by complete fabrications, by complete myths. The election denial was one of the biggest ones in the past few years. Fortunately, we saw that rejected pretty soundly. And that just felt good to see that happen, to see people not accept those people who would not accept election results that went against them. It was also rather heartening to see some of those people concede, you know, and that's when I realized, hey, you know what, maybe this is actually ending. Maybe we can actually communicate with people again as if they were playing in the same reality as the rest of us. Wouldn't that be nice? And, you know, credit where it's due, Lee Zeldin conceded the day after he lost, which, you know, these days is pretty fast. And I don't know, we could have done worse. We could have done better. But again, you know, I'll take it.
Well, I think that the thing that we participated in, democracy itself, is something where a lot of Americans' interests did intersect and do. To this very moment, and many people, I think, stopped wanting to just passively consume a lot of the kinds of hysteria and antagonism that was on the airwaves, and they started talking, and they started talking to one another, they started talking to people that they might have as easily hurled an insult at a couple months ago, maybe, but they really had to draw some lines, and you know, what is the point of this thing we're doing? You know, what does it mean to be American? A lot of those big, deep questions, I think, were on the table, where or if it's geopolitical, international relations and so forth. Some of that really overshadowed, I think, and superseded the differences. And there was a lot of instructive behavior, seeing international cooperation, not just after a pandemic, but with war and dealing with the kinds of consequences and crises of immigration and otherwise, and food, keeping people secure, I think, is one of those things when people were asked to speak on behalf of their country, they spoke about things like sovereignty and security and the well-being of civilians and so forth, people that want to eat, and just you know, sharing that common thing of everyday life, no, regardless of our differences. And I think that hits home, because that's a very American thing. And to preach it or to experience and witness it going on internationally and not try to forge something anew at home, mm-hmm. In a political moment, and maybe even admit to yourself, you know what, I can do better. I can find other candidates. I can, I can establish this baseline so that when it comes time to my interests, the other side will actually really listen to me because I gave them as much respect.
Yeah, you know, I do see a lot of tides changing. One thing that leapt out is the Republican Party suddenly seeing the light with regards to Trump. You know, everybody now is attacking Trump in the Republican Party because they see what a loser he really is and how he is responsible for so many bad candidates, most of whom lost in the last election. And it's just kind of funny and weird and almost a little scary, too. They all get it now. You know, we've been talking about this for years. And now they're like, you know, he's not a very nice guy. He insulted me once. It's like they're coming out of a coma. And they're realizing, wow, this guy, Trump, doesn't represent our interests. When did you ever think he represented your interests? You know, he's a billionaire from New York City. What do you think he has to say to some poor guy in Kentucky? I don't get how that was ever a selling point. It was. He had you under his spell. They welcome back. It's good to have you back. But boy, you know, well, how much time did we waste with this?
They got to hear it from one another. They can't hear it from Democrats. And no matter what, it just they that can't be where it comes from. It's got to be from within, as in other scenarios.
I just hope that a lot of the people who have fallen under his spell, and I'm talking not politicians, I'm talking regular people, I hope they give Democrats a chance now. Now that, you know, basically the country has said, no, you're the better choice. Let them do some work. See if things improve. See if they're able to accomplish things without the constant blockading that Republicans have been doing for the last bunch of years. And this is an important aspect to what's ahead, because we still have that Georgia runoff, because neither Raphael Warnock or Herschel Walker got 50% of the vote. So they have to have a runoff. I think it's December 6th. Now, the Senate is already confirmed to be in the control of the Democrats because of races in Nevada and Arizona that we finally finished counting.
Mark Kelly.
Yeah, so it's 50-50, just like it was before. Here's the thing, though, and I hope people don't say the Georgia race isn't as important anymore. It is important. The reason why is a 51-49 majority is very different than a 50-50 tie where you have to have Kamala Harris come in and cast a deciding vote every time. That takes time. You know, every time you have a federal judge that has to be confirmed, I think it adds a week to the process for her to do that. And she's not being vice president and doing other things that are important as well. It slows down everything. Also, 51-49 allows Joe Manchin not to have the power that he's been wielding over the past few years, or Sinema as well. You can pit them against each other, perhaps. It's just things will go so much smoother and faster if it's a 51-49 actual majority. So I think the race is more important than ever in Georgia, and I certainly hope people don't take it for granted or think it's not important anymore. Here's something interesting. Just today, Raphael Warnock's campaign sued the state of Georgia. You know why they're suing the state of Georgia? This, you can't make this up. You really can't make this up. It's Georgia, but for God's sake. The state said it's not going to offer Saturday early voting for the runoff election, the Saturday before the election, a pretty important day. You know, Saturday is when a lot of people are you know, free and are able to go down to the polling station and wherever it is they drop off their ballot. See, the state is interpreting this law that prohibits early voting on the Saturday following Thanksgiving. Now, last time they had a runoff in Atlanta, I think it was in January, so this wasn't an issue. This time it's in early December. So, yeah, that Saturday is a Saturday following Thanksgiving. Now, why can't you vote on the Saturday following Thanksgiving? Well, the day after Thanksgiving is a state holiday in Georgia. It's a Confederate holiday. It's a holiday commemorating Robert E. Lee, the Confederate Civil War general. And in 2015, state officials dropped Lee's name and started recognizing the day simply as a state holiday. It doesn't have a name, but it's because of Robert E. Lee. And somehow that translates to the day after that also being a day that you can't do things like vote. I don't get it. Makes no sense. It's stupid. It's going to hurt turnout on all sides, I would imagine. But Raphael Warnock is completely right to try and challenge this. It's ridiculous. Can you imagine, because of a Confederate holiday, you can't vote? I mean, wow. Let's try and do better, Georgia. This is silly.
That's just begging for a challenge.
It really is. I do have to step in. We are in fundraising mode here at WUSB. And there are many ways you can support us. First of all, if you're listening to us, you are in the minority. The reason being, we are still operating at a fraction of the power we should be operating at, because our transmitter blew up early this year, and we have been trying ever since. Our chief engineer has been trying ever since to get a new transmitter, and we actually have one on the way. That's the great news, that we have one on the way. It takes time to get here, though, because of all the supply issues. We expect it hopefully by the end of the year, maybe at the beginning of next year.
It got stuck in the vending machine.
It's somewhere. I don't know. But the really good news is that we will be at 100% at 90.1. Now, we have our other station, 107.3, which we need to do some power increases to because of what other stations in other states have been doing. So that's a whole process that we need to jump into, and hopefully that happens very soon, so that that frequency can be restored as well. So if you're listening to us right now, you've overcome those barriers somehow. Either you're sitting across the street from one of those transmitters, or you're listening to us online, perhaps.
You're like a deep space telescope, essentially.
Maybe you're listening in the future to one of our recordings. I don't know. No matter what you're doing, though, you can help us. You can help us by either calling 631-632-6901, which is our pledge line. If, for whatever reason, that doesn't result in success, perhaps it's a time when people aren't in the pledge room, you can always go to WUSB.FM, and there's a big red banner at the top of the page. It says, click here to donate. If you click on that, you will get taken to a page where you can fill in all your information, a secure page, and that is how you can help us. It's super important to keep WUSB going, because we've been able to talk freely about this issue and other issues, and so many other people are able to do the same thing. And over the years, since 1977, when we first went on the air and we had that sea shanty ID, we have been doing all kinds of amazing things for the people of Long Island. And no other station can do that. No other station can say that they have been here for the campus and the community like WUSB has been. And not beholden to anybody, any network, any commercial interest, anything like that. Just our listeners. So please, 631-632-6901 or WUSB.FM. We know a lot of people listen to the program. A lot of people get something out of it. A lot of people argue with us or agree with us. Regardless, the important thing is to have a voice. If you wander around the FM dial and you wander around the AM dial, you won't hear voices like this. You'll hear other voices. You'll hear the same voices, you know. They're represented pretty well. But here we have an open place where hundreds of people get to spread their music, their opinions, their cultures, and it changes lives. And you can help ensure that that continues. 631-632-6901, WUSB.FM. Click on the click here to donate button. And you'll feel great.
Any and every contribution makes a great deal of difference. So please consider it. This is an all volunteer, student and community produced radio station that is not beholden to any special interests or commercial interests. And your contribution right now, by picking up the phone or going to WUSB.FM and clicking that red donate button, you get to express your support. You're raising your hand, however visibly, But most importantly, through that donation, saying this is the kind of media I appreciate, and it is something I can get involved in, something that I cherish in my community. We would not be anything like this if we were commercially run, if we were taking ads or other things. There are so many invaluable contributions from the community, from the university, our ability to continue on the history, the legacy of this vital communications resource in times of emergency, inclement weather, tragedy. We're here for you. We listen. We work on the mundane of making sure things that should work do, the technical aspects of taking your calls and letting you voice your ideas and your thoughts, your reactions to music or talk radio or sporting events, whatever it is that we're trying to curate here in any given point in time is a labor of love. It's something that so many people care about. They have been trying and trying and trying over and over again to get it right, because we like the character, the personality, the individuality, being a little rough around the edges, that spirit of college radio, of freeform radio, and the community effort. Like I said, it's invaluable. You can't buy, you couldn't put a price on it. But whatever you can contribute right now, it makes a enormous difference. So put a little price on it, whatever you might be able to set aside. We so love that. We so appreciate it. We run on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're still here for you. That's what makes this possible and keeps the airwaves from being stale, from having the same playlist, the cliched stuff you're hearing anywhere else on the dial. This is a place you stop. Because you never know. You don't know what kind of music. You don't know what the DJ's got on their mind or what's going on here at the university.
It's interesting because they say that young people saved democracy in the past week through turning out en masse at the polling places and voting against the anti-democratic forces. And that certainly is true. And young people are running WUSB as well and getting involved in radio, as many of us got involved decades ago as young people. And we have older people as well. You know, people up into their 90s have worked at WUSB. It's an incredible, diverse place. And it stays where it is and grows and prospers with your support. And that is so very, very important. And I just found out we have a toll-free number. I didn't know about this. 1-888-632-WUSB. 1-888-632-9872. If you want to call toll-free. Or if you have an unlimited long-distance plan or are local, 631-632-6901. But again, WUSB.FM, 24 hours a day. You can click on that. Click here to donate button and donate as much as you possibly can. And keep this station going. And much like with elections, there's a lot of misinformation out there that you'll hear if you tune around. For instance, not to pick on NPR. I like NPR. They provide a service. But my God, must they provide a service on every frequency there is? You know, there's a station, won't name names, but there's a station on Long Island that says we're the only NPR station on Long Island. Yeah, they say that. That might be true. Technically, that might be true. You might be the only NPR station broadcasting the same NPR programs to Long Island, but that doesn't take into account all of the other stations from Connecticut and all the translator frequencies that they have to reach various parts of Long Island. Last time I counted, it was over 16 frequencies that you could get NPR on, and that's not even counting the New York City stations. Yeah, so NPR is okay, you know. Saying something like this is the only NPR station on Long Island is like saying this is the only station with the letter U in the call letters. No, it doesn't really matter at that point.
That's a saturated market.
It's saturated. That's enough
more
already.
More than a dozen.
The other thing, religious stations. Oh my God, you know. Look, this is my opinion, but I think religion is a product. I don't think it qualifies to be non-commercial, but yet they take up valuable frequencies on the non-commercial part of the dial, which is below 92. And that's less voices like ours, like other people, that get to be heard, because 24/7, you have to hear about religion. You have to hear about particular religion. Yeah. And, you know, how many Muslim stations are there? It's always the same religion. You know, it's always the same people controlling all these airwaves. So it's not just commercial radio that gets taken over. It's non-commercial radio as well. So WUSB is the exception. We're the station that is out there surviving. Right now, we're crippled. Right now, we have a mere fraction of our transmitting ability. And that's why we so need your help at this point, because we're not reaching nearly the same number of people we usually reach. We are doing everything we can to fix that, but we really need your support. And one more time, the phone number 631-632-6901 or the website wusb.fm. Now, let's get back to our analysis of what's been happening over the past week. Okay, what happened here? What happened on Long Island? My God, people, I am so disappointed. And, you know, those few of you who can receive our signal right now on Long Island, I'm talking to you. I mean, my God, I mean, look, we've had Lee Zeldin as our alleged representative for 6 years now? You should know what a lie is by this point. But apparently we don't, because we voted en masse to go red. All of Long Island is now red. We're basically Staten Island now. Or maybe even we're Florida. I don't know. What are we? It doesn't feel like we're in New York anymore.
I think it's Stockholm.
It's terrible. It's awful. And you know, there are so many innocent victims. You know, Steve Englebright, good friend of mine, former county legislator, current state assemblyman. And I don't know for sure, because I don't think the final numbers have yet been tabulated, but it looks like he's losing his race to get reelected after decades of doing nothing but serving the people around here and saving the environment more times than I can count. This guy has never been divisive in any way.
Shows up.
He sure does. And he always fights for the people of the area. And you kick him out because he has a D after his name? Really? This is the legacy of Lee Zeldin. This is what he did, because so many people followed him blindly and they just took everyone else down with them. It's sad. It's wrong. And you have people now. We have a new representative, Lalota, who doesn't even live in the district. And we basically kicked out a really potentially great representative. It's just sad. It's frustrating to see this happen, to see it happen right here in your backyard. And the thing that that really gets me is how Democrats screwed this up. You know, I've been complaining about this for weeks now. Hey, there's not enough presence on Long Island. I see the Zeldin signs up everywhere. I saw maybe one Hochul sign, and that was immediately taken down. Same thing with other candidates. They didn't pay enough attention to the area. But worse than that is earlier in the year when they tried to redistrict, and somehow they messed that up. They have super majorities throughout the state, and I don't like gerrymandering. I really don't. It's basically how you make some votes count more than others. I'll give you an example. Wisconsin, where I believe, what was it? I think it was a 2-1 advantage as far as the congresspeople they elected. I think they Republicans got 4 out of 6. I think it was something like that. I did a little calculation here, and I took the number of people, actual votes for Democrats, actual votes for Republicans, and just added them up statewide. It didn't count the races where there wasn't anybody running against the Republican candidate or when there wasn't a Democrat running, just Republican-Democrat contest, just to compare them. I mean, look, if Republicans are going to win 2/3 of the seats, then seems like they should have something close to 2/3 of the vote, right? No. They had 939,726 votes total. Democrats, 1,013,052. Yeah, 73,000 more votes went to Democrats, yet they lost. I mean, it's not just the Electoral College. You know, gerrymandering causes all kinds of harm in this way, and it's absurd. They basically follow lines where they know Republicans live, and they just get more people to have their vote counted more. And the people that they are opposed to, they make sure they're in districts where they can't possibly have enough people. They just get relegated. Now, the people who are responsible for the redistricting, they are the local state assembly people, state senators. State government gets to do this every 10 years. Now, New York State had a great advantage because it was all Democrat. And the 10-year period, 2020, they had the potential to redraw the lines and give Democrats a tremendous advantage. Democrats should have won several seats. But what happened? It got thrown out in court because we play by different rules. Yeah, a place like Florida, a place like Tennessee or Wisconsin, they can just do it and say, oh, yeah, that's just, we have the power now. This is what we're going to do. But in New York, we try to play fair. Yeah, we play by different rules. And even though the court was appointed by Cuomo, you know, in other states, they would simply follow what the governor told them to do. But not here. No, we played fair. And the Republicans took advantage of that. And they got the advantage even though it was a Democrat-run state. I mean, yeah, it's great to play by the rules, but not when nobody else is. You know, if Republicans are going to, I'm not going to say cheat because technically they're not cheating, but they are abusing the spirit of the law by doing that. If you don't do the same thing, this is what happens. And all these losses in New York probably cost the House of Representatives, the entire House of Representatives. Yeah, Republicans will control that because we failed here in New York. And it is a failure of the Democratic Party, no question about that. There's also another big issue with the number of people around here who buy into the election-denying crap. And don't forget, Lee Zeldin is an election denier. They're talking about Lee Zeldin now as a rising star in the Republican Party. They want him to run for the head of the Republican National Committee. Yeah. They want him to be the chairman. After he produced the closest governor's contest in New York since 1994. I mean, he got his ass kicked, but, you know, if you relied on Long Island to decide, he would be governor now. Think about that. We have to fix things right here. We have to start that conversation. Because the rest of the country seemed to get it, you know, but not New York. Yeah, New York City, great. Thank you, New York City. You saved our asses, but the rest of the state, and I know, you know, most of the rest of the state are cows. I get that. If you look at the map, you know, all this redness, there aren't any people there. And the places where people are tend to be blue. Long Island, there are a lot of people, so we don't get that excuse. What's happening to us? Yeah, I know, I grew up here, and we always liked Southern rock, and, you know, there was this racial undertone. I know, we have a history. But it's supposed to get better, not worse. Having lawyers in charge of your local government, or in charge of, you know, representation to Congress, sure doesn't help. Having hatred and fear spread around, all kind of racist propaganda, it leads people down the wrong path. And I think that's what we're seeing here on Long Island. We have to fight back. Yeah, celebrate what we have accomplished nationwide, but let's not forget, Long Island in particular, New York, as a state, it's a problem right now. It's a serious problem. It is the anchor that is keeping us from sailing away and succeeding on so many levels. Never thought I'd say that. Never thought New York would be the problem, but right now it is.
Yeah, that that disdain and I don't know, resentment, it's going to run really deep. We were talking earlier about trust and finding commonalities, but at the same time, I mean, Democrats will not soon forget, I think, a lot of the disparaging things. When you stack up the sorts of things that were said about Republicans that are probably true, however hurtful or difficult in a campaign, versus the amount of things that were said about Democrats that are outright lies and caused untold damage to people back during the campaign and into the future, not excluding the House Speaker's husband, but just completely demonizing the other side and the Democrats in the way that Republicans did. I mean, whenever would you ever trust a Republican again? And Zeldin is going to lead their committee, huh? Okay. It is truly irksome, and I hope is met with a bit more than kind of just this quiet discomfort. And I truly wonder, like, what is the grievance, like the hatred for Democrats? What have Democrats really concretely done to any one of the Republicans that are so diehard for Trump and for I don't know, the imploding Republican Party?
It's based on a lie. This is the whole thing. You know, it's based on...
It's a fervor of lies, yeah.
This is the difference as I see it. The Republican positions are given strength due to emotional reactions to things like crime. And crime is something that you can manipulate to make it seem like it's much worse than it actually is. And if you look at statistics and talk to law enforcement people who aren't also working as campaign managers, you'll see that crime actually is not soaring. It's not out of control. And this whole bail reform thing that everybody's freaking out about, if you look into that a little bit, it doesn't take much to look into it. There is no connection between increased crime and cashless bail, whatever it's called. I mean, that is one of the main running points of Republicans, and it worked. It worked because people got so freaked out by it. But the facts say otherwise, just like the facts say otherwise about the election being stolen, you know, and so many other things that people just kept repeating, hoping that they would stick. And in many cases, they did stick. Now, compare that to, you know, what Democrats are accusing various Republicans of. Okay, so let's look at the Lee Zeldin case in particular. He's anti-abortion. He thought overturning Roe versus Wade was a good thing. Given the chance, he would vote to make it illegal. Absolutely. In the House, he would have voted against it. If it came up in the House, he would vote against abortion rights. There's no question about that. He has said this himself. He voted against election results. He tried to stop it on January 6th. These are facts. So things aren't being made up on the same level. Sure, there's exaggeration, but it's not done to the same degree that we've seen Republicans doing time and time again. And in many places, people were smarter. They saw past that. And in most of New York, they also saw through that. They just didn't around here, and I'm still really upset by that. I'm also upset at anyone who is in the area who didn't vote, you know? I mean, to say that we live in a blue state and things are safe, last week proved how inaccurate a statement that was. Because, yeah, you may live in a blue state. We may have been assured that Kathy Hochul was going to win, but look at what we lost. Look at what we lost. We have basically a continuation of Zeldin now in the House of Representatives. We're very likely to have lost an incredible representative in the state assembly. And the examples just go on and on throughout various regions. And all it would have taken was another 1,000 people or so voting. And it would have been very, very different. Your vote would have counted. A lot. Don't ever make that mistake again. Please.
Yeah, or several thousand Republicans being a little bit more honest in their vote. I truly think it's about responsibility. And all of those issues, like you're talking about poverty and so forth, the deeper, more interconnected root causes of a lot of that is worthy of getting into. But if it's only ever that kind of shallow hyperbole, why even start? I mean, Many years running up with the previous administration and all of that campaigning. We're pretty well conditioned, whether to engage in that or not. It's just mostly hot air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, could have been worse. Could have been worse. But Long Island, you got to do better. You really got to do better. We'll be talking about this in the weeks ahead. Hey, I understand World War III might be beginning soon. We do have to devote a little bit of time to that. So what? Missiles falling in Poland? That's the latest news that I'm hearing?
Yeah, there was some kind of facility, I think it was agricultural, where several farmers or workers at the facility were hurt. Two or three people were killed, and maybe some other injuries.
Well, you know, I just saw something on...
It's about 4 miles across the border.
There's a Twitter account I follow called Ukraine Weapons Tracker. I think you follow them, too.
I do.
This is what they said just about an hour or two ago. We analyzed the available photos of fragments and came to a clear conclusion that they belong to the 48D6 motor of the 5V55 series missile of the S-300AD system, which is a Ukrainian one. Although other missile types, 48N6 series, and possibly others also use a very similar design, these aren't available to Ukrainian forces. It's important to note here that this ID is only of this fragment. We can't be sure if nothing else landed or precisely how this happened. They posted a picture of the NCL 48N6DM SAMS rocket motor, which looks nearly identical to the fragment found in Poland. They conclude by saying, of course, the whole incident appears to be a tragic accident. Now, the Associated Press reported only a few minutes ago that Poland, as of Wednesday, it's Wednesday already over there, they said a Russian-made missile fell in the eastern part of the country, killing two people in a blast that marked the first time in the war with Ukraine that Russian weapons came down on a NATO country. The reactions are interesting. Now, you know, what the Ukraine weapons tracker said and what the Polish government is saying are obviously two different things. But I think it goes to show that there's still a lot of confusion here. There's still a lot of possibilities as to what exactly happened. Could a Ukrainian missile have shot down a Russian missile and they both landed in Poland? That's certainly possible.
Or could it have been... interrupted or disrupted somehow by jamming or other techniques that disabled its trajectory and that's why it ended up further away or who knows, you know, but, miscalculation in the launch of it. I mean, nobody can really say immediately until you get more information.
This is when cool heads are really, really important because I know Russia immediately said that this is Western propaganda. You know, okay, who's shooting missiles in the area? Yeah, Russia, you were shooting missiles in the area today, weren't you? And this appears to be a Russian missile. At least, you know, many reports are saying that. How do you think that might have happened? You think that the West just grabbed one of your missiles, transported it over, and blew it up in Poland to try to frame you? You know, tell us what you think happened. I don't really believe that Russia is bombing Poland. It doesn't make much sense. I know some people believe that this is how they test the limits and try and, you know, abuse borders and things like that, but they're losing the war in Ukraine. They're not in good shape. Not the best time to, you know, try expanding the realm. It's not going to work out very well.
Wait, you want to listen to what the Russians have to say?
Well, you have to listen to what they're saying
about what happened.
I want to hear. I want to hear how they explain it. If they're going to say that no, we had nothing to do with it, you're the ones firing missiles on the very day in the area. So
yeah, like 90?
It's pretty obvious that there's a connection somewhere. This didn't come from Lithuania, okay? This came from Weapons Tracker is saying that it was somehow Ukrainian, or as Poland is saying, it was Russian. You're involved one way or another because, you know, Ukraine doesn't fire missiles for nothing. So if they did fire a missile, it was to shoot down one of yours. They're not bombing their own people. I know there are Russian propagandists that are saying they are bombing their own people. They're not. especially not in the western part of Ukraine. So, okay, we're listening, Russia. What are they doing? What did happen here? We need to listen. I don't think it was on purpose. I really don't. I'd be surprised if it was. We need to have a firm reaction, one way or another, but a reasonable reaction. And we need to end this thing once and for all. This has to stop. It's been hell for the whole year.
Yeah, I just think it's all about keeping a strong posture and doing more training. And, you know, maybe this means there's more joint and cooperative efforts that need to take place so that these kinds of things don't happen again.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Predictably, Ukrainian President Zelensky decried the strike as a very significant escalation of the war. He really wants the West to get involved directly, and I think that's a mistake. I understand why he would feel that way. I certainly would say the same thing if my country was being decimated like this. But I think we have to let statesmanship work here, and this is when it counts. This is why you have people who know what they're doing in these positions. If you just have idiots running things with their reactionary statements, that's how you make mistakes. That's how you go down roads that don't come back. So I really hope that competence wins in the end here.
Yeah, I don't think the NATO or Ukrainians in any way, really, those allied nations are making those kinds of miscalculations. Certainly not nearly in the way that the Russians are doing with regularity.
Yeah. So that's where that just happened. That just happened, what, a couple hours ago?
Yeah. It was this afternoon or early evening our time, so probably evening.
Well, it's early evening our time now, so yeah, it happened in the afternoon.
Well, people can go back and figure it out exactly.
Yeah, they're early evening, I think, over there.
Yes, and everyone was waiting for a press conference from the Polish, I guess, territorial defense, whatever representatives would have more insight, and that was when we went to air. But it is really, really important to pay attention to, and it is a very tense moment.
Absolutely.
Because this isn't going away necessarily. We still have, there's a lot of issues, a lot of humanitarian angles to this, and, you know, our own identity, our own meaning. What, you know, what is the point in the world? What are we doing collectively, individually? I think that's been the tenor of this week, is looking inward, if that's even possible with some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Discovering a little bit about our purpose and you know, the impact that we're having. And yeah, I think not for everyone that time will be on your side. You know, there's an imperative and an urgency to some of the world's problems. So don't be too introspective.
You know, this is when I'm happy to see people that, like, as I said, who know what they're doing in positions where their skills are needed right now. Now, you know, Biden, for instance, what was up with Biden last week? My God, he was talking right after Election Day. I saw him talk the day after that. Then all of a sudden he's in Egypt giving another talk. It's like nothing has changed. He just got to Egypt somehow. And then the day after that, he's in Cambodia giving another talk. And now he's meeting with the Chinese premier. It's great. It's amazing. This guy is really on top of things, and he moves at the speed of light. I don't know where he is right now. He's probably in Ukraine. But it's just, it really was something this past week watching him.
Yeah, you have to be excited when you're trying to keep up with a delegation like that. It was a planned trip, so yeah, exciting to see the diplomacy in action. The way he is received, I think, tells you a lot about how the election is felt around the world, in him representing the results of that in many ways. So more progress would be a fine thing, since we're not campaigning as much anymore.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am sick to death of the jokes about his age. I really am. You know, people just, it's an easy target. Yeah, okay, he's 79. Trump is 76. I mean, come on. I know, I don't hear the jokes about age when it comes to Trump. 3 years really makes that kind of a difference? Really? Who do you think is more competent? Biden? Trump? It's obvious that Biden is more... is more competent.
Well, I like so, I like that he's underestimated, and frankly, I think he does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's having fun with it. I know that, but I hear you know, Democrats saying, "Oh, he can't run again." Why not? We're talking seriously about Trump running again. Why wouldn't you want him to run again? He's strong. He's getting things done. Yeah, he stutters occasionally. Big whoop.
All hey, right. It's a great thing to think about, but let's wait till we're actually discussing it.
All right, we're out of time, but it's been a joy. It's been fun, as always. And please, please call the station, 631-632-6901. Pledge your support, and if you can't get through there for whatever reason, go to the website, wusb.fm. Let's keep this place going. Let's keep this place strong, and we'll get through all this, and hopefully World War III will not happen. OTW@2600.com is our email address. See you next week.
Make sure you got good data.
Bye.
We're just pawns in the middle, sitting ducks with no aquil.